Welcome back to the podcast. This is Season 3, Episode 3. This week, we're looking at the new release, which pretty much makes Photoshop redundant for... I'm going to go out there with a fake statistic of 99% of photographers. Obviously, don't check my sources. But pretty much everyone, it is going to be a game changer for my portrait work, so we're super excited about that. We've got a bit of industry gossip. We're going to have a little bit of a catch-up. We're going to talk about the best and worst upgrades we've made throughout our photography careers. And we're also going to talk about last week, which was the, not last week, it's the week before last actually, which was the, I wrote the script a while ago, the biggest week's shooting I've done since I moved into the studio nearly a decade ago. So I moved in here in 2016, but I shot a lot of frames and I shot every day and it was brutal. So we're going to talk about that as well. But yes, before we go too far in, Rob, what have you been up to?
A whole bunch of stuff, really. Last Wednesday, I had a movie premiere, as you know.
Yep.
So finally got to see something I shot on the big screen in Broadway. Now, not the one in New York, sadly. This is the Broadway Theatre in Nottingham, which is a lovely place, by the way. So thanks to Eve Harding for doing all the hard work and the directing, producing, and Eunice in Nottingham for supplying the cash money to get it done.
And how was it seeing it on big screen?
I don't know if you have this, but it's awesome to see it, and it looked great. I was sitting there making mental notes about things I need to fix in the sound and stuff.
Yeah. So I suppose it's very different sound, isn't it, compared to, say, on your computer?
Yeah, I mean, even headphones. Though, you know, and through headphones or through studio monitors, there's still things, because even at that point, because obviously cinemas tend to be quite loud, you don't get to see things or hear things, you know, quite in the same way in that kind of environment.
And I suppose with bigger budget, you'd be able to do audio tests in such an environment to see how yes. the furniture soaks it up, see how it bounces around the room, how it fills the room, what the balance is like. I mean, we get constant people complaining about audio on the YouTube channel. And the main complaint is the audio is out of sync, which it's not. That is people listening to it on Bluetooth devices where they don't have very good Bluetooth devices.
Yeah, or watching it in 4K and the computer lags.
Yes, absolutely. And then other people are like, it's too bassy. There's no bass.
Down to your particular device that
exactly.
you're listening to.
Exactly. It's the same with the colours, isn't it? When people are looking at certain colours and stuff, it's like, oh, it looks a bit green to me. It's like, are you looking at it not only on a calibrated monitor, but a good monitor that's been calibrated correctly, and that the environment your monitor is placed in is correct?
Yeah.
Because that matters more than the calibration. Or at least it makes the calibration redundant. Like, there's a monitor over there, our tether monitor. We do not calibrate it because it's pointless. We have LED lights, we have halogen modeling lights, we have natural light coming in. It's impossible to calibrate it because the environment's too varied, and also it's not correct for shooting. You basically want a pitch black room.
Yeah.
Candlelight at most. But yeah, so you had your premiere. What else have you been up to? Anything else? Any shoots?
I've got another shoot tomorrow, another highlight reel for a band to do.
Nice.
And did one a couple of weeks back with a lady called Leah, a really great soul singer. It's like, you know, when you dig the music, like, I don't even want to shoot this, I want to listen to this lady sing because she's so good.
And how have you edited that one already? Is that like
done, dusty, delivered?
Nice.
So, you know, fortunately, hashtag no backlog.
Oh, that's always good, isn't it? I've got a small YouTube editing backlog. But I'm all up to speed on like work, which is a very nice feeling. There's nothing outstanding. There's no re-edits or second rounds or third rounds. It's all done, delivered, and off to the races.
I've had a couple of things come in now for some colour work to be done. I've had a Dead Bar, the other film I've been involved in for a while. So that's now in the can, so to speak, in terms of the directors are concerned. So now come back to me for some colour.
Good.
So I have to get that done by the end of the month because that's got its premiere next month in Amsterdam. And then I've also got another one coming in from Rebecca, the Sherlock Holmes thing I was working on. That's now done, dusted, and ready for some movie magic.
Oh, so you're going to be looking for some more work to fill up your free time.
I know. That's it. I'm sure you can find a use for some of my free time.
I absolutely can. We have a to do list here that is so long that we sometimes just start new to do lists. It's all a bit chaotic here. But yeah, so we've both been busy shooting. You video, me stills. Yeah, it's been a lot going on there now. I don't want to cause industry gossip for this next bit here, but there has been... So if you look at photography, you can split it into various subsects, I suppose. I'm going to do a gross oversimplification here. You have the hobbyist and camera club people. You have the YouTube and Instagram people. And then you have the commercial professional photographers. Now, YouTube and Instagram people have been moaning about the industry for years. Professionals keep it shtum because we're professionals. However, it is recently everybody's just losing their with the way the industry is at the moment. I keep seeing representative photographers, agency representative photographers, saying how bad it is. Now, I agree with them. It is bad. And I think it's fine to say it as well. But it's just interesting that now they're saying it. There's been a lot of people I know who haven't worked in over a year.
And I think this is the thing, that you can only have a drought for so long before you have to admit there's no water.
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting at the moment in the industry. Like, we were supposed to be doing a massive campaign last week. It got cancelled. It was a lot of money. The week before, we shot every day. I've done a fair few shoots this year. Nothing massive, though. Nothing like perpetuity, six-figure take-home. But there's been a lot of shoots. And there's been a lot of inquiries. And they are time-wasting inquiries for major clients, major brands, and none of them come to anything. So much so, I'm just not responding anymore. It's like, if you're just fishing for numbers, you know, go fish elsewhere. It's there's a lot of tire kickers out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously you know, the world's been in an interesting state, shall we say, for the minimum last 6 months, more like 8 to 10.
Yeah.
And you're probably getting now to the point where in boardrooms and companies, there's now the conversation, okay, we need to look at marketing now. And this is where that kind of influx of, shall we say, phishing emails are coming from, because they're allowed to have a conversation, but there's nothing set in stone.
Yeah, there's a lot of conversations. I mean, I've been getting some ridiculous briefs as well. Like, it's like they've not even thought it through. There's one where, and this was from a big brand, their brief and their timeline worked out as taking a shot every 2 minutes. And I just responded and went, we don't believe this is physically possible to achieve. If you have over 1 million, we can talk about it. And I was like, because we're going to need to have 6 or 7 photographers working simultaneously.
It depends on the standard you're willing to accept.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you can take a photo of your team, or actually no, we physically couldn't in this. It wouldn't be possible. You're looking at a shot an hour on a rush day. We'd need like teams, and like, if they need that, we've had shoots before where they've come in and gone, it's a 1 day shoot and it's 6 days work, but the budget's unlimited. We're like, we'll make it work. But this was just like someone's going, oh, we need 300 photos. And it's like, great, for what? For what possible purpose? We've also had people submitting the forms that they need to submit to their accounts people, going, can you fill this in for us? And they're like, no. What's the brief? We don't have a brief yet. Just fill it in. And it's like, no, absolutely not. So there's been a lot of that. There's been a lot of time wasting. I'm not doing three-way pitches anymore, because we're doing a lot of three-way pitches. There are a lot of work, a lot of effort. They never come to anything. And we've checked as well. And often it's not that someone else wins it, and that's all. It just never comes to anything. They're just doing it to like see what they could get. And yeah, so I'm not doing that anymore. No more three-way pitches. No more quoting on anything unless it's a fully finished brief where they know what they're doing. And I think a lot of photographers are going into that sort of mindset now as well. It's just like, I'm not doing that.
But it's impossible to quote for if you don't have a fully fleshed out brief. Oh,
honestly, like, this is from major ad agencies. How much would it cost to shoot this? And then there's just a mood board. I'm like, I don't know. Give me anything to go on here. We just want numbers. It's like, cool. Somewhere between 50 and 500,000. I don't know. Can you narrow it down? Not really.
Yeah. Like, can you be more specific with your brief?
Yeah. Like, is there actually a shot list? You know, so there's a lot of that. Everyone's pretty fed up. Everyone's annoyed. There is still work out there. We are still getting work. Other photographers are getting work as well, but it's not like it was. It's definitely a tough time in the industry. And obviously everyone's going, oh, it's over. It's finished. It's not over. It's not finished. It's just the whole, it's not just us.
Nice. Any walk of life.
Businesses are closing down in my building. It's just the economy. So this is why I preach multiple streams of income, of which I currently have many. So many, I don't reckon I could rattle them off without forgetting one. But if you don't have multiple streams of income, then you're just setting yourself up to have a disaster. Even if you've got a day job, if your only stream of income is your day job, that is so stupidly high risk. Because at least when you're self-employed, you go, it's getting bad, let's tighten the coffers. If you've got a day job, you're probably spending like normal. You don't know that the owner of the company's sitting there going, I've got 48 hours to go.
Yeah,
I've had so many friends turn up to workplaces and just padlocks on the doors. And that's it. They're just done. Well, you had it with your old studio, didn't you?
Yeah.
They padlocks on the doors.
Well, I mean, literally, I got 12 hours notice to move all my stuff out, or the receivers would have had it.
Mm.
And they knew. They didn't just find out 12 hours before. They've had letters for months.
Yeah, it's been going on for ages, and they just let you know last minute as a tenant there.
And they obviously got the High Court writ enforcement officers.
Yeah.
Give them the notice. All right, we'll see you tomorrow, lads. And, that's it.
So, yeah, it's a bit of a downer to the start of the episode here, but don't worry, because the next bit's really good. We've got some software, which is going to make Rob question his life choices.
Time to learn new skill set.
Time to learn. Well, do you know what? It's one of those things, like the AI we're using now to edit these podcasts. You were doing that before, or I was doing that before. It ain't a fun job.
No, it's laborious.
It is laborious. Love making these, hate editing them. But this is, is going to fit. Yeah, so industry is not on a happy place right now. Everyone's fed up. Agents are fed up with all this ridiculous estimates coming in. I had a load from some chains of restaurants in London come through, like loads of different ones. I didn't even respond to say no. I was like, I can't be arsed. Why waste my time? Go make some money doing something else.
Mm.
So, but yeah, it's... But then on the flip side, Pete and Cameron were down here last week, my agents, were going through the books and everything, and there's a lot of jobs on the table at the moment. So it's easy to feel down when you look at the way things are going, but at the same time, it's not like it's over.
No, and it only takes a couple of those to land to, put you back in the pink.
Exactly. It's... I think we've got... We've got one job that might come back, which has been delayed, which if we get it, that's cool, but I'm not counting on it. And then we've got another job which is looking like a pretty much certain, and that has to be set for the year, really. Even though it's been a bad year, what are we in, May?
Currently, yes.
Yeah, we're in May. It is currently May the 17th, and we're, it's not all bad. It's not all doom and gloom. It's just the whole world is absolutely messed up at the moment. Between American trade wars... Still recovering from a pandemic and all the rest of it. It's all a bit...
Yeah.
I saw other gossip here. Cobra cables are getting complaints from customers in America because people are buying their cables at $100 and then when it comes in, it's not $100. No. They've got a little bit of an extra bump to pay there.
Yeah, I wonder what caused that.
Is it a 250% tariff for China?
It was 150% last
150%. So they're paying $250.
But again, that number is going up and down like a fiddler's elbow.
I know, I've stopped watching it
now. When you had like the CEO of like Walmart and Target explaining to him, look, mate, we're about to have empty shelves and it's all your fault. Can you please do something about this? Okay, just 30% for China then. Right, okay, great.
Yeah, so yeah, there's a lot of that going on in the States at the moment. People trying to buy kit in. The kit that's currently there on sale, once it's gone, it's gone.
The problem is, it's all on the water. But now the boats are just floating about, waiting for the tariffs to stabilise before they land it. Because if they land it now, they're in like a lot of money.
Well, I've just bought a job lot of stuff from China because they were selling it cheap because someone's bought it and doesn't want it.
Yeah.
So it was in the warehouse, so might be seeing some merch coming from us soon, some nice light modifiers.
Sadly, not a container full of iPhones, because that'd be awful.
That would be good, wouldn't it? But then they've lifted the tariff on iPhones, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, shall we say, inviting CEOs for personalised conversations.
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
if ever that was code for, I'm open to bribes, lads. So who doesn't want to pay tariffs on their products? Then I don't know what is.
No, quite. But speaking of stuff from Asia, as I check my time, because obviously I haven't done a podcast, and I've got a new timepiece.
You have? You've gone full G-Shock, baby.
I've gone full G-Shock.
Absolute god tier.
It's the Tough Solar one, which charges up, and it's now fully charged. It was on medium for a long time, so it's set in a dark box. It's got the radio time sync thing. It's pretty darn good.
I mean, G-Shock is like just the Mac Daddy of watches, let's be honest. It's like, it's the SAS of the watch world.
Yeah, I'm very pleased with it. It's not left my wrist. I literally sleep in it. It's got my alarm on it.
Yeah, I mean, they're virtually indestructible. They are really reasonably priced.
Yeah.
In terms of timekeeping, it's about as accurate as anything can be. Far more than any of, and I do mean any, luxury Swiss watch.
Yeah.
And they're just awesome.
It's much more comfortable than the F, whatever it was I had.
The F-191W.
Yeah, which has now been stolen by my child, who loves it, actually. He loves that watch. He's really into it.
It's a great. I mean, that's the one watch anybody that calls himself a watch collector should have.
Yeah.
You know, and they've sold millions of them.
Not always to the best of people, though.
No. I mean, because ironically, it's so cheap and so accurate. There are many other uses for that particular time. Which we shan't go onto here because, demonetization.
Yes, there are a few different uses for that, which is interesting, I suppose. What are you wearing today? Whilst I set up the screen recording over here, give us a rundown.
My Panerai GMT today, so.
Nice. And what time is yours saying?
Mine is saying exactly 15 minutes past the big hour of 12.
Mine's saying 16 minutes past.
I mean, is ever so slightly?
Oh, it might be on.
We're about to hit the 16, so.
There you go. I think we've got a 20-second delay between the two of us.
Yeah.
Which is not bad going, is it?
No, I mean, a fair difference in the price of the two, in fairness, which, you know, and I guarantee yours is more correct than mine.
Well, I think so, because it gets the...
It's the atomic clock, isn't
it? The atomic clock thing. which I'm liking. I am liking the atomic clock system. It's just like a set it and forget it sort of jobby. Which is, I think, the way that all watches should be. All things should be. I'm very utilitarian. I like a very utilitarian world, really. I like everything to be as functional as possible. And you know for sure I'm still looking at Land Rover Defenders.
Yes.
Because, who wants electric windows when you have a tin can, wind downs, and a lot of oil leaks?
In the modern world, I would say absolutely you do want electric windows. Every car park, especially now you got apps with a QR code to scan yourself in and out and stuff now.
Yeah.
NCP hack is much cheaper if you use the app, by the way.
Yes, I've got the NCP app.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So literally every time you have to do that or go to a barrier and no, you need electric windows. Sorry, I know it's awfully bougie and, you know, my daddy would be like turning in his grave and like, what is wrong with you, Rob? What have you become?
See, I don't have electric windows in my MX-5 and I must say, it's great because there's no air conditioning either. You wind down your own window, but then you want the passenger side window down for extra breeze. You've got to stop the car.
Yeah.
Get out, walk around. Yeah. But I like the idea of it. I'd love it if everything just went back to analog. But it's not going to. And following on from that, which is a great segue, is... the new updates, the reason why I was right in not learning Photoshop for this particular set of skills. So Capture One have got a new update and it's coming out on the day this is released. So if you're watching this, you can get this update. Also, I've got a link in the comments below and you can get 30% off.
Oh, that's a significant number, that.
No, there's a bit of negotiating going on with that. There's 30% off, and it's only available for 2 weeks. Get your 30% off. It is, regardless of what I'm about to show you here, if you want to work as a professional photographer, you have to use Capture One. Someone in the comments, it's industry standard, and it's industry standard for a reason. We won't go into that in today's episode, but what I want to show you is the new update. I've got the test version, the beta version. Now, I've been playing with this for the last few days. Rob has not seen this. Rob is our resident retoucher here, so this is going to be interesting to show you. I've got some raw files on my desktop. I'm going to talk you through all of this. If you're on the audio podcast, it should still make sense, but... it might be better on YouTube at this point. There are two new updates within Capture One. The first is the way that sessions work. So for those who don't know, every time you do a shoot, you start a session. They have catalogs as well. I don't know anyone who uses catalogs, but sessions are what you do. And at the moment, they come with a capture folder, a select, output, trash, and that's kind of what you get, and you name the session and all the rest of it. You can now add additional capture folders. You can change the structure of it. You can even save it as presets for certain things, which is great because... every time we do a shoot, we need a subfolder in there called videos because we shoot videos as well. We also want one called PSD files for PSD files. We also, all these different files, we can set them up instantly and we can have it saved as a preset. And it's like, today we're doing a stills and video shoot, set it up. Today we're doing this and this, set it up. And also you can have multiple capture folders. So you can capture one, as you say, you're doing five shots. You can bring them all into separate capture folders. I've not done enough of this yet to understand the full... I understand what the update is, but what I don't understand is how it's going to really help us long term. So that's been really interesting. Just being able to set up that video folder, like without having to go into Finder.
Yeah, it's like in DaVinci, having your preset node tree.
Yeah.
Just ready to go.
And saving it and having it as like a preset thing. So it's like, well, today we're doing this kind of shoot. Let's have it set up like this. Mm. Today, that to me is going to make a huge difference. So that's great. There's obviously going to be more uses to it. And as we use it, we'll find those, I think. But that's not what I'm most excited about. That's cool. I mean, it's cool from a day-to-day kind of thing, but it's not cool in the way that this next bit I show you is going to be cool. Let's just call this testing. And whenever I do anything like this, delete at the end of it. That just means that I know when I see it, I can delete that without having to worry. So let me just open up this. We'll just go into not desktop. Let's go here. Drag these in. Got some files in here. What we're going to do, I'm going to show you what would be a in and out of Photoshop type of edit. Let's close that bad boy down. I'm going to find somebody in here. We're going to take one of these shots here. So let's get rid of the before and after grid. We've already graded this in Capture. I just want to find one which is a bit more. What are we looking for here? Maybe this one will be good. Let's do this one. Here we go. So here's this chap here. Skin could do with a little bit of work. That I'm sure we're happy with. So let's head into here.
Seeing for the first time in a long time, this now feels like a school day for me.
Yeah, I know. This is the one, isn't it? This is where you get your little lessons in. So we're going to go in here. We're going to add retouch. Da-da-da. It's like my fancy sound effects. So now this is going to do a bit of AI magicry. And if you just go shade detected faces, it's recognized the face. Now I'm going to quickly go through this. Here's this lovely chap's face. Nothing wrong with his face. Needs a bit of tidying up. Normally, frequency separation. And to say that's a time-consuming process is an understatement. I'm going to go all in on 100% on everything here, and that because this is how I live my life. We go all the way in, we remove everything, and then we finesse afterwards. I'm going to give him really even skin. It's going to look ridiculous at the start. I'm going to add some contouring. Now, this is what I do on all my edits. We go too far, and then we pull each one back until it looks natural. Now, this, the way you do it, will be... See, we don't want too much of even. That's better around there. Contouring's not too much. There we go. Dark circles. Now, I want to keep those all in there, actually. And there's too much blemish removal. So now what I'm doing here is just sort of... You can see I need to be at 14. I went all the way to 100, obviously, because me. And then if we take the impact here... We can dial, we've got the balance going on there. And now we can just go, look, let's dial this down. So that's original. That's retouched. I would say, still got skin texture. There's no smoothing. It's not like, do you remember back in the olden days where, and it's not removed like moles and birthmarks and things like that. It's not gone over the top. We can even like dial it back a bit. You can choose where you want it to be. It's so fast.
Yeah, but I say that's the important thing is it's quick.
It's so fast. And it's just, I've tried it on so many files, like old people, girls, guys. I think I've actually gone too far in this. I'm going to add a bit more texture into the skin. Turn this down a bit too much. There we go. That's better for me. That's more what I'd want. It looks natural. It looks real. I thought it missed the blemish then, but it's actually dirt on my monitor. But it looks great. I think that's a great bit of retouching. And again, if we just turn it off, that's where we were. You can just slowly bring it up until you're happy with what you're getting. This is, for anyone who shoots portraits, I mean, it's just a game changer, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's so fast.
I mean,
I've seen this built into certain other bits of software, but nothing like as fast or intuitive as this.
And I think that's it. Like, there's various plugins you can use and bits like that. But the benefit to this, One is it's better, which is always a good thing. But two is you don't leave the software. And anybody, one of my kids like, Scott, how many photos have you taken? I was like, 1.8 million. My girlfriend was like, how do you know that? I was like, because it backs up every night. And when you've got that many files, once you start taking them out into other bits of software and saving different file formats, and you've got 13 copies of the same image on your server, it becomes a nightmare. This is all within this session. This is all here. This is all in one place. This just makes life better. And it's all done. So if we're shooting, let's take this chappy here. This is probably the hardest. This is an old guy. this will be the hardest thing to fix because we don't want to make him not look old. That is not the thing here. We want to get rid of a couple of blemishes on the skin. We can maybe, and contouring sort of adding contrast, but it, I'm, now, get at me in the comments here with what you want to know what's doing. Well, I've got a phone call booked in with their chief super nerd. But from what I gather, from what I'm seeing here, this is adding contrast to the skin tones.
Yeah.
Which is great. Now, obviously, if we smooth, let's see what happens. If we smooth up the skin of an old person, still looks old, actually. That.
Yes. I mean, you'd expect plastic fantastic at this point.
You just, would, it, wouldn't it you? But it's
it
not.
It just hasn't.
It's smoothed out the bad parts of the skin, but it's kept the wrinkles. It's kept the, and excuse my, I'm sure he won't be offended. He is old. He's a, but it's kept the old look to him. He looks old still, but he looks polished. And that's what, I mean, do you remember back in the olden days, there was this thing called like skin softening in a lot of the editing softwares, and it just literally removed sharpness and texture.
It was terrible.
It was horrific, but this is great. Like, I've just smashed in the maximum amount of even skin tone and he still looks old.
Yeah.
Which is obviously what you want, isn't it?
Just looks like he's got a good skincare routine.
Yeah. Got some dot, too much on that. Yeah. So you can play around with this to your heart's content. It's all in the file. It's just, yeah, it's great.
And again, it's all working non-destructively as well. So
yeah, non-destructively. Your raw file's still in there. You can go back. You can alter it. You can change it. I'm pretty darn chuffed with this, to be honest. I think it's great. It's going to change. Like this shot here, had to go into Photoshop before. This is the original RAW file.
Yeah.
Now it can come straight out. It's ready to go. It's good to go. I don't need to do anything else to it. It's just, it's a final photo. There's no Photoshop needed to it. So we've just saved all of that time, all of that work. This is what AI should be doing.
Yeah.
This is what software should be doing. This is what photographers need. It's not, here's a new thing. It's like, how can we make this faster and more efficient?
Yeah, as opposed to generating dragons and
I've been playing with a lot of different software recently and I'm like, this is really cool, but it has no use to me. But much like the DaVinci thing we've got with the AI podcast editing,
it's actually useful.
It's actually useful. And this here is a game changer. I'm super psyched for it. I think it is perhaps, it's the biggest upgrade we've had in a sort of stills editing that I'm trying to think what the last big upgrade in stills editing was. There was a whole bunch of really good masking features.
Yeah, I was about to say, you'd have to go back as far as masks, I think.
Like the auto-generated masks, they were pretty good. Before that, noise reduction. I think noise reduction was good a few years back.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm later to the party than you, and noise reduction was kind of already a thing.
Yeah.
It's become more refined for sure now.
Yeah, it's always been there. It's just better now.
Yeah.
So we've got good noise reduction, which is nice.
That also ties in with the cameras available at the time needed it.
Oh, my word.
To the point where they just kind of don't these days.
But this is like, there's already, do you know, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. But yeah, so these are the new things. There's the new sessions. We're going to do a whole episode on Capture One and how we use it. And we are going to get in some of their techie people. So whatever it is you want me to ask them, let me know. Because I was having a great chat with them last week. They're really friendly people, actually. You can, you know, they pick up the phone. I was like, why are your color profiles better than another particular software's color profile? So I did a video recently comparing two bits of software. And everyone's like, you didn't use the same ICC profiles. They're not the same. They might have the same words. They ain't the same. Fuji Velvia in one piece of software is not Fuji Velvia in another piece of software. And there's a reason why it works better in Capture One. Which we can go into with these people, and is the reason why the sliders do a better job. There's a reason why the raw file interpretation is better. There's a reason why the color management is better. All these things are real. They're not like folklore. There's actual functioning reasons why it all happens. I chatted to them about them all. They explained it to me. I'm not going to butcher it. We'll get them on. So if you have questions in the comments below, let me know what it is you'd like me to ask the Capture One people. It can be anything. Like, I can ask them any, you know, conspiracy theories, awkward questions,
yes.
Fill your boots. I will ask. If you type it down below, I will ask them. You know, they're very open people, very friendly people. Sounds like a nice company to work for as well.
Yeah.
What I've gathered for the rest of them.
And I mean, yeah, you can just tell by, again, it's one of these companies, you just tell they care.
They care and they get it.
Yeah.
Like, they actually get it. They understand. You know, all these other camera brands, the making stuff, it's like, no one asked for that and you've removed the thing we needed. It's like the 5D Mark II came out. brilliant camera. The 6D came out as an upgrade and they removed the PC sync port, which meant any studio photographer couldn't use it.
Yeah.
It's like, why? Who didn't ask? Like, who forgot to check?
Got rid of the CF card as well.
Yeah. I mean, no pros using an SD card.
Owning two 6Ds, I know.
Yeah.
The screen was much better, though. That's what I will say. Yeah. The screen was really color accurate on the 6D compared to the 5D.
I mean, yeah. This is the thing that they go, oh, computers ship with SD cards. We should use SD. No, just because. But yeah, it's the same with Apple, isn't it? Every time they make you a nice new upgrade, they somehow shoot themselves in the foot at the same time.
I mean, dare I say, under the Steve Jobs era, they were actually mostly right. Like, they were the first ones to get rid of a floppy disk drive. Nobody needs that.
Yeah, that's true.
Everyone complained about it, and then actually, no.
You don't need it.
And then the last MacBook I owned, which was the 2012 solid-state Retina one.
Yeah,
the last of the Steve Jobs era.
That was good.
Again, got rid of the CD drive. Everyone was like, so, but when was the last time you used one? And you get a £100 plug-in super drive if you need it. Once a year when you need to put something on DVD for someone.
And then they made the mouse where the charging port was underneath it.
Yep, still terrible. I mean, of all the faux pas, I mean, all the companies, Apple, to have done that.
But I mean, Capture, I've been involved with Capture on a few times. Now, they've got a new CEO since I was last involved with them. And it's been a big change at the whole company. The whole thing's different now. And like we had Ellis Digi on the podcast a while ago. If you haven't seen that episode, go and watch it. It's brilliant. He is the Oracle of Digi. So I think they pretty much use him as if we do this, what happens? And he's like, well, if you do that, the following people can't do this on shoes. I'm like, cool, we won't do that then. This beta version has been out. Anyone can test it. And they have groups where you can just go, oh, by the way, when I try and do this, which is what I need to do in my workflow, I can't do it. It's a way to make it work. And they'll test all that. I had an issue with the Fuji tethering. When it's in live view, if you took a frame, it crashed the whole thing, sent them the log files, and it doesn't do it anymore. So someone fixed it.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, they're good like that. So yeah, they're our sponsors for this season. I'm super psyched. And as you know, we only take on sponsors for things we use, which is a really daft thing to do from a business point of view, because it means that the people who can sponsor this podcast are limited. But this season, we've got MPB again, which is obviously where I buy all my used kit from. As you know, I'm tight. And Capture One, which is the software we use. And we have used
for many years
since the P25 plus back.
And again, if people have a dig through your YouTube channel, which is extensive now,
you'll
find many videos on the subject of Capture One versus other software, and at no point have you said, no, this other software is as good as this. It's just, no, it just isn't. Sorry guys, anyone disagrees with me, you're wrong, but this is why you're wrong. But please, you know, do your own experience.
I should also add, I pay for my Capture One.
You paid for it from day one.
I always pay for it. I still pay for it. Actually, I should be asking them for a free copy now. They're sponsoring the... Yeah, I'll drop them a line. I'm like, can I get a free code? But you can all get 30% off. If you sign up for the next 2 weeks, 30% off. You get 7 days for free at the start as well. I'm not sure how that works. But 30% off. The code is in the comments below. Go and learn how to use it. I mean, we're going to... There's so many reasons to use Capture One. We'll go into it in a different video. But yes. That's the new thing. That is going to be a game changer for me. It now means, because I only get Rob once every other week or once a week at best, if I do a portrait shoot, I don't know how to do frequency separation, I can still deliver those files before Rob's next in.
And I will say, just on a personal note, that frequency separation is one of the most bandied about words, and it was all the rage for a while.
It was, and everyone looked ridiculous like a doll.
Yeah, but just because people didn't understand how to use it. That was the thing. It's like, right, so yes, you physically separated the texture layer from the color layer. Brilliant. Now what are you going to do?
Because
the image looks identical to the one you started with. And that was the key, is like learning what to do on what layer and so on and so forth. So that was kind of the thing everybody kind of got wrong. Now, the other important thing with frequency separation, now we're talking about workflow efficiency and all these things, you know, budgets are getting tighter, et cetera. Now, all of this has a massive impact on what, you know, on the quote you give to a client.
Absolutely.
Now, you can't sync frequency separation. You have to do every image individually, one-to-one.
Yep.
That.
Save it and sync it across the
save
board.
Save it and sync it, done.
And I think this is the good, like, say a budget is tight. Now, sorry, retouchers, but you're going to be, obviously they're still on the big jobs, which is what they're there for. But for smaller jobs, which someone like me can't edit themselves, I can now take those jobs because I don't need a retoucher. Yeah. I mean, I'd never take them otherwise because I couldn't afford a retoucher on the budget, but now I can take those jobs. I still make the same money.
Yeah.
and the client still gets the same quality of work.
And you saw how fast that was. It's not a lot of additional time just to dial that in.
Seconds and then copy and apply.
Yeah.
There seems to be a bit of a misunderstanding with everyone's like, oh, wedding photographers don't use it because you can't batch edit. You can. You just go copy, apply. You can even save. It works exactly the same, but I don't know. There we go. So that's the new software. That is what is making my... This is making me want to shoot portrait sittings for people, individual portrait sittings, because I don't have to worry about having to pay researching fees and all these things. So often I wouldn't shoot something. Like, say I want to do a personal shoot. I go, yeah, well, it's going to cost me an extra 400 quid in researching time.
And time is the important part.
Yeah. Time and money. I mean, money's getting important these days. We're currently flogging a load of stuff on eBay to we're building a new studio next door. It's finally happening. You've seen the...
Oh, I know. It's emptying out.
It's emptying out. I'm very excited. I've got my granddad's workbench in there.
This has been, what, 2 years odd in...
It was supposed to be cleared in 2016. Yeah. But never mind, 2025, we're getting there. There'll be a new studio. I think, and I've thought about this a lot, I'm going to rent it out to photographers. You can come in, you can use all the Broncolor kit, you can use all the technical kit. Maybe. They're going to have to leave big-ass deposits. And there's going to be none of that nude camera club shenanigans going on in here where it's like an 18-year-old girl and 10 middle-aged men. But we will rent it out to people, I think.
Yeah, and again, if you're looking for like a professionally set up studio, I can't think of another one in Leicester at least.
Oh, there's nothing like this in Leicester.
No.
There's nothing like this in the Midlands in terms of space and equipment.
Yeah, that's
good. Obviously, there's great spaces around, but yeah. So there we go. That's that. That's the software. That's the sponsors. That's why we've got the lights on today. Although actually, we've got no lights on in here at all because the light outside is beautiful.
I know.
It's like a soft, diffused light coming in through the windows.
It's a good light day.
It's a really good light day. We're cracking through. So we're going to move on to the next topic today, which is the best and worst or most disappointing upgrades we've made in photography, because we've all done it. We've gone out and bought something and gone, that didn't quite work. And we've gone out and bought something else unbeknownst to us and gone, this is a game changer. For example, I have got back, I'm trying to do my pointy hand here, or my arms are over on a wide lens. Sorry. Behind Rob is a softbox of biblical proportions. It doesn't look it in this video. Rob, whack your headphones off and go and stand next to that softbox. They need some context.
And I'm a big lad, so...
This was an accidental purchase. Look how big it is. Look how big it is. Some idiot misread inches and centimeters. I thought I was getting a big softbox, but I was... Don't make the joke.
I was going to say, it's Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
it's the Stonehenge. So it's not my fault he doesn't know the difference between feet and inches.
So this idiot here didn't check, and I thought I'd bought a big softbox, a pretty big one.
You were correct, you have.
As I was putting it together, and I was having to stand inside it, I was like, oh my God, this is massive. I love that softbox. Sadly, I never use it, because it doesn't really work for any of the stuff I shoot for. But we shot this one fish campaign years ago with a softbox that big. The lighting...
I remember that.
...was delicious.
Unlike the odour in the studio.
Oh, it didn't smell good in here.
No.
It did not smell good. But yeah, the light from it was absolutely delicious. And it was an accidental purchase. And I've got this, I've got a box of stuff over there I'm flogging on eBay at the moment. And it's all stuff I've bought and missed the return window for. I've got an O2 sensor for a car that I don't have. I've got a tuning box, ECU for a car.
Like a chip upgrade.
Yeah, that I don't have. It's a Brabus one down the car.
Yeah.
I've got the chip. It all just needs to go. I'm prone to that sort of thing. But that was a brilliant purchase by mistake. It's one of those things, it's like, yeah, it's good. Unfortunately, I have no use for it, but I won't get rid of it. But I'd say better than that is the Broncolor Hazy, which on this camera, if it cuts to me, I don't know if it will or not. It's up here. On the angle looking at me, there's a Broncolor Hazy. I've got two of them, actually. And they're both brilliant. We shot last week on them. We'll get to that in a bit. Everything with the Broncolor Hazy. The light quality, the ease of use. Again, this is one of those things, ease of use. The stand it comes on, it's like a, no, it's not the flamingo stand. I can't remember what it's called. It's a brilliant stand. You can position the light wherever you want with ease by yourself. If you're doing that with a boom arm and you want to come down 30 centimeters, that's a stressful maneuver with a big softbox on there. It also has perfect reflection because it's not a saggy box. Like if you look at the softbox over there, you'll notice it sags in the top and bottom, the big one does, because of the weight of it. This is a solid box, so it's firm. There's a big one actually the same size as that softbox called a Cumulite. And it holds three Broncolor heads, and you crane it in from the ceiling. And I keep looking at buying one, but then I'm like, I've got to rig it onto the ceiling, and there's rebar in that ceiling, which is not the one to be drilling into. I think that's probably one of the greatest things I've got is the Hazy. On the flip side, I bought some cheap soft boxes when I got my Broncolor lights. There's one of them hanging up there behind the Hazy. It's a Godox softbox. The light from that is shit. I should really just give it to somebody because I don't use it because it's shit. Like the material on the front of it is the wrong color. It sucks. And it just sits there as basically a background light.
Yeah.
Like there's no real purpose to it. It's just,
I mean, you can work with it if you're only using that as your one light.
But then
it's difficult to mix with other lights.
The actual quality of light sucks as well. There's nothing good about that light. I've also bought cheap tripods.
Ah, yeah.
They suck. Always buy the most expensive secondhand tripod you can afford. It's better to have a secondhand £500 tripod than a brand new £500 tripod.
Yeah.
You get much more stability for your money there. Good quality. I mean, actually, my stand that's behind you, that's a pretty darn good purchase. Actually, I didn't even purchase it. I got given it.
I believe that came from an auction. I mean, at an absolute fraction of the new price.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. I think I got it for like 100 quid or something at an auction.
Yeah,
might be right.
And they were like thousands.
Yes, yeah. That was a good purchase. Do you know what? I've never regretted buying expensive light stands, tripods, or column stands. They're always a good purchase. I've always regretted buying cheap ones. Cheap light stands are a false economy. I used to have loads of them, and you'll notice I have none of them now. Not because I got rid of them, they broke. And when you've got 10 cheap light stands, it's still a lot of money. Mm. It still racks up the pricing, doesn't it? It's not like a cheap light stand's cheap. It's still 50 quid.
Yeah.
Like 10 of those are still 500 quid.
They weren't cheap, but the kind of, shall we say, more traditional ones, they were Manfrotto.
Yeah,
so they weren't cheap.
They weren't cheap. They still died.
Yeah. But every again, it's just that old cantilever design. It was just so antiquated. It's just not the one.
Yeah. I think any rigging by premium, any like metalwork stuff, buy good quality stuff. I mean, we use Manfrotto stuff in here. It's pretty good if you buy the good stuff. If you buy the cheap stuff, it is pretty cheap. LED lights are another one you can't skimp on.
No, you need something decent.
Yeah, good quality. And again, if you buy them secondhand, they last forever, don't they? Yeah. LED chips. And obviously not forever, but like most people will never run an LED light into the ground. Have you ever gone through an LED light?
Not yet.
Like start to finish of life?
No.
No,
I still, own every one I've ever bought.
Yeah, I mean, we have them on in here all the, like this one here is on daily. That's lighting is here. Whenever we're filming anything, it's on. And at the moment, we're filming a lot of content for Studio Access.
It keeps on trucking.
Keeps on trucking. And it, you know, I don't see why, like, unless there's an electrical fault inside it.
Yeah, it would take a lot.
Yeah. What's the lifespan of an LED chip?
Oh, it's just like hundreds of thousands of hours.
Yeah. Should be pretty good. Disappointing camera upgrades I've made. I would say I've been very lucky in that I've never bought a camera and gone, oh, that's not as good as I hoped it would be, because I've rarely upgraded. I went Canon 50D, Canon 5D Mark II, Canon 5D Mark II, Canon 5DSR, 5DSR, Fuji GFX. They're substantial upgrades. I've never got one and gone, nah. Yeah.
I mean, I almost went down now, my disappointment came from a very different thing. Like the first camera I bought, when I was all excited and I turned 40 years old and bought my first ever camera with no plans to do anything with it. I mean, you know, we didn't even know each other back then.
Yeah, yeah.
It was only a few months later where I kind of got bitten by the bug and decided to make a point of meeting you. I bought the 650D and I was like, you know, brand spanking new. I was like, oh, look at this, because it was a birthday gift to myself.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know what, completely fine. And then got more into it. And then December of that year, I decided to make the move and bought a 6D. Immediate disappointment, because you know why? My pictures looked exactly the same as they did the day before. Now, the limitation wasn't the hardware. It was the squidgy organic bit pushing the button. And I had to learn to get better. And then once I understood, about 3 months later, started to understand what the camera actually could do for me. I'm like, ah, right. And at the time, I was the resident photographer at the O2 Academy, where you're mostly shooting variable stage light stuff.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah. And the lighting wasn't always great at the O2 Academy.
Oh, mate, I had one where literally, if there was more than two candles on stage for the three tracks I was allowed to shoot, I was shot. I delivered one frame of that, and that was just one. And they said, where's the rest of them? I said, that's it. So I said, what happened? I said, well, speak to your lighting guy.
Yeah, there's no light on the subject.
You know, there's literally, it was pitch black.
Yeah.
You know, don't care what sensor you've got, you can't capture that.
No, exactly.
But that was the thing. So the initial disappointment was, oh, I've got this full frame, bad boy. And then you're like, oh, it looks exactly the same.
Yeah, pictures look the same.
Because I'm still the same person.
I tell you what I did get disappointed by, and which I now use daily, was buying a 24-105. When I got that lens, I was like, well, this sucks. Because obviously before that, this is back in your days where you're not very good at photography and you just use bokeh to hide behind. So I've got like the Canon 1.450, the 1.885, the 2.8, got 24-105 f4. I'm like, everything looks flat.
Yeah, it's just a bit meh.
Yeah, whereas now, I love that lens.
I still maintain, if you can only take one lens with you somewhere, that's the one lens.
Absolutely.
Because in terms of flexibility, and I still argue, it's a better lens in terms of use and practicality than the 24-70 f2.8. Yeah. Given the choice of the two, I pick the 105 because I shoot that more at 105 than I ever do at 70mm.
Yeah, but I do find with zoom lenses though, you're either all the way out or all the way in. It's rare that you're like, oh, my 24-70, let's shoot at 56.3. It's like, I'm at 24 or I'm at 70.
Yeah, one or the other.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I remember getting that lens and just being like, well, that was really expensive and everything sucks. It just takes a picture. Because my pictures sucked at the time and I was hiding behind bokeh. If you can't shoot everything at f8 and make it look good, it's because you suck. And that was, I didn't realize at the time that the lens was bad. It wasn't, it was me. And yeah, you know, I used to shoot weddings with a 35-1.4 and an 85-1.8 and they looked beautiful. Banged on a 24-1.05 and they looked awful because my composition, my narrative, my light was all off. And, you know, time I couldn't see that because I thought I was bloody brilliant, but
yeah,
looking back on it now, it's like, oh god, did I suck. But yeah, I think the other camera which I was very disappointed at was a 7D, which everyone raved about, borrowed Dangerous Dave's for a while.
Birdwatch has raved about, and that was kind of its magic, that it turned your 300mm into a 420mm lens or whatever it was.
Yeah, that was all it had going for
and,
it. Though.
And again, it was had the super fast shutter. You know,
yeah, so I mean, it's not a bad camera, but everyone, I think there's so much hype about it. And then I got it, I was like, well, yeah, it's pretty average. And the colours are always wrong out of camera. You've got to do so much colour correction on it.
Which is unusual for Canon, because normally their colour science is quite good.
They look pretty darn good out of the box, don't they? Although colour science and camera brands, we'll get to that on the next Capture One thing, because that's a fascinating subject of marketing debauchery. But yeah, I think, you know, I don't know.
You see, I've been lucky. I mean, I've never really bought anything I've really regretted. I mean, my absolute biggest upgrade ever was, for video work at least, upgrading from the 6Ds to the Blackmagics.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean, that was just overnight. I was just like floored at how much better it was. I mean, it's not even a little bit. I mean, not even twice as good. It was more than. It was just every single thing. I mean, it took me a year to learn how to use that camera properly because everything was backwards. Like, hang on, it's dark, but now you're shooting at a low ISO. I don't understand that. Shouldn't I be shooting at that? And just everything just baked your noodle, and working with raw files, raw video at least for the first time ever, and all of these, and working in a log profile, which we've never had.
Yeah.
I mean, we all did the thing where we downloaded the Technicolor look for your 5D, and oh, look, it's now some flat. Yeah, but by the time you've got it back to basic Rec 709, that you've maxed out your grading capability. So while you can do it in 8-bit, you shouldn't.
Exactly. And I think it's the same, like for my YouTube channel, the biggest upgrade I made was the Blackmagic 6K. And it wasn't because it's 6K or anything like that, or like the great image quality. It's just because when you're self-filming, you always mess something up with the composition and you can just fix it. And you always, like, I shoot a lot of natural light in here and you get it all set up, it looks great, and then the cloud moves. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. You just fix it in post, and that saves me so much time. If I want to film a how-to video over on Studio Access, I can set it up wide and we can punch in to like ridiculous amounts and still export a good 4K video. Yeah, they've been a massive, you know, game changer of a thing. And yeah, I think I highly rate the Blackmagic cameras. They're so cheap.
I know. And the Pixies came out and there was a lot of grumbling initially because it's just the 6K full frame in a different box. And for the most part, I can't really find much fault with that argument. However, for about another £500 now, you can have the Pixies 12K.
Yeah.
And that sensor is completely different. It's like, there's none of this cropping into the sensor business now as you change your resolution.
You know, it's just all in there, isn't it?
Yeah, it now just does it all natively just because of the way the pixel grids are the rays done. It's fascinating. So, you know, you can downsample correctly a 4K image from a 12K capture and still have the entire frame for use. So you're not cropped into a tiny little bit of it. You're using still got the full width. So your 24mm lens is still 24mm and so on and so forth. But now you've got the resolution you want. Amazing.
I mean, I can't imagine when the 6K is going to shit the bed and die.
In terms of resolution, not anytime soon.
But when it does, I would probably buy another Blackmagic. Although we still need to have a go with the Fuji for video.
We do.
Because that would be great.
That'd be an interesting experiment.
Stills and video on the Fuji.
Yeah.
During a commercial shoot. I don't know if it's going to be good enough quality for video.
I think it will be, but I think it'll be things like sort of workflow and flexibility that'll let it down more than the raw image quality.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the sensor's huge, so how can it be bad?
It depends on what log format is coming out, doesn't it? And what gradability we've got, frame rates and stuff like that.
Yeah, and bit depth.
I mean, we speaking of which, we shot the GFX 2 weeks ago. So last week that we're here, I did a whole week shoot. And it was, I shot, now I only know this because on the Broncolor app, it tells you I reset my daily frame counter each week to see how many frames it. I did 10,750 frames in a week.
That's a lot.
All shot, edited, delivered, and it was all e-commerce work. And we filmed a lot of it as well over on Studio Access. We're doing a whole thing on e-commerce product work, pack shot work, all of that sort of stuff. The pricing, the marketing, the business model, the tech, everything. It's all going on over there. Because I'm sure you know, I have many, many income streams. And one of them is a business that sells things. And Muggins here had to shoot it all because finding an e-commerce photographer in the UK who could do a good job is a nightmare. Because you have two problems. One is they do good work, but they're a nightmare to deal with. And the other is they suck. Mm. And our budget was only £1,000 a day. So I didn't want to deal with an individual where there's going to be a nightmare, there'd be delays, there'd be mistakes, or there'd be an ego, or whatever it may be. This is probably a good lesson to any pack shot photographers out there. Like, trying to find somebody to do it was impossible. I mean, I spent a week looking for a photographer and I couldn't find one.
Yeah, until you thought, I'll do it myself.
Yeah, I'll just do it myself. Obviously, I made a loss doing it as a photographer, but the other company took a win. So I can't quite calculate whether I'm up or down.
It's, you know, you lose one and gaining the other. But as I we had this conversation at the time, you know, I think that ultimately when, you know, if you look at that as a standalone business,
yeah,
that's what will set that apart from all the other ones.
Yeah, yeah. We've got great branding, great packaging, great product. The whole thing's put together nicely and it's nicely photographed. We're shooting the models next week with it and then the video as well. So yeah, another busy week of shooting e-commerce video. And of course, we'll be doing might need to borrow a camera from you actually to film that because I'll be using mine.
That's fine. Mate. I'm going to be at Bearded Theory next weekend. So, you know, you're welcome to.
Amazing. So we'll be shooting that, adding it onto a Studio Access. But yeah, 10,000 frames. I've not shot that much in years. We don't really shoot high volume stuff. And my God, is there a skill to it? Like the first day, I made such a mess of it. I got home and I was like, girlfriend's like, right, we're going to have, I was like, no, I've got to rename 3,000 files because I did a boo-boo.
Yeah.
I was knackered. Used the hazy light for everything. One light, one pack. Had a kid in at the weekend. He came and helped me. He's only 10. He knows how to run a Broncolor Scoro pack and the app. He knows how to connect it.
Which is more than I do.
He's a demon. He's like plugging it in, turning it on, making sure it's off at the pack before it does the wall, all that sort of good stuff, brilliant stuff. He'll be on the podcast again soon, actually. I was asking, because he did a review of people's work.
Yes, Lawrence Reviews.
Yeah, so he's going to be back on doing some reviews again. We'll do that in the Facebook group. But yeah, it's been a busy few weeks, ups and downs. Industry apparently is dying. I'm absolutely rammed. Can't tell if I'm skin sore loaded at the moment. We'll see. We'll all come out in the wash.
Yeah. I've lost weight, so that's a win.
I think I've gained weight, sadly. I think we had such a stressful week last week that I might have stress eaten almost daily.
Well, I, as you know, last week had my kind of, you know, I kind of weigh myself monthly. I don't fixate on it or any of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, every day you're up, down, not down. But over the month, you're going to average out somewhere about roughly where you're at.
Yeah.
And I knew something was amiss when I step on my smart scales and he says, "This has changed by more than 2 kilos. Are you sure it's still you?" I'm like,
yeah.
Oh God, what have I put on? And then lo and behold, I lost 4.5 kilos last month. So.
Winner. That's good. Kilo a week. That's good going, that is.
Yeah, I mean, to the point where literally, I think it's been nice to you, I picked the scales up and moved them in 5 different positions in my bedroom just to make sure it wasn't that floorboard was a weird thing or something, you know. And now everyone came back and was saying, I'm like, wow, okay.
Oh, winning it live.
So there so immediately went out and smashed about 12 pints of beer down just to celebrate.
That's exactly what you want.
Yeah. So 3 stone down, mate, in 7, 8 months.
Oh, good stuff. That's a.
It would be great if it wasn't just the halfway point, though. It's like, oh, God, do it all over again.
Yeah, but you know what? I think the longer you do it, the easier it gets.
A nice little routine now where it is now a lot. My life is like that now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I eat the way I do and exercise the way I do. And, you know, I still haven't quite conquered sleep, but I've bought some stuff, as you know, that might help me with that. So,
have you tried it yet?
I haven't yet.
Oh, get on it.
I think because next week's going to be a bit of a mad week. The one week I've had has just been a week from hell.
Yeah.
For reasons that I won't get into on this channel. And then I've got 3 days at a festival as a guest of the Brandy Thieves, who I know you've...
Yeah.
They're still using the promo shots you did for them way back.
Jesus, that was like 2017?
Right. It was one of 2016? The first one of the first things you did when you moved in here, that was.
Yeah, one of the first shoots I did, I think.
And they've invited me along as their guest for the weekend at Beardy Theory.
Nice.
In a kind of... This is probably their last festival... That they'll be doing because, you know, they kind of went off to do their own things.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kane's moved back to Ireland and a few other bits and bobs. And they were like, well, you were at the first one, Rob, and we'd like you to be at the last one.
I
was
like, oh, nice.
That's cute. So, yeah, so I'll be spending next weekend in a field with them, mostly doing no work.
Oh, that's even better. Taking a camera?
Do you know what? What I might do is take the Osmo Action.
Yeah.
And the drone, because I can fit that in. I'm not taking the Black Magics. You're welcome to borrow these for the weekend.
Oh, nice one.
Because it's just too much faff and hassle to lug those things around.
Yeah.
And I'd rather just go kind of like stealth it and see what you could do with those two mini cameras.
Yeah, that Action camera's got really nice footage. What's it called? The DJI?
The Action 5 Pro.
Yeah, apparently it's the same as my Osmo, but it looks better out of your camera than my camera.
The sensor's actually, I think, the same size. Potentially the Osmo might be slightly bigger as a sensor. But I think back to colours and colour songs, while they're both shooting the same profile, D-Log M, it does look better, I think. There's something about the Osmo that I've never, it's always looked a bit dirty in it. It's really difficult to describe it. But I remember when you were first doing it, you were filming Teddy in the forest.
Yeah, so it's just muddy.
There's something dirty, something muddy about
it. Yeah.
Whereas the Action seems to be quite good. Obviously not going to be, I mean, you know, these aren't tremendous in low light, but they're pretty damn decent with the dual ISO and everything else.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've lost my DJI.
I mean, it's small, but, you know.
I've lost it. I can't find it.
And you were using that on the daily.
I know. Like, what have I done with it?
It must be in the Subaru or something.
I don't think so. It's gone anyway.
You have to reclaim that.
I know.
but that is kind of my plan. I'd like to do a little bit of something, but that's probably what all I'll do is you'll just take the Mini 4 Pro drone and the Action 5 Pro cam with the little gimbal that I bought for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, if anyone wants to, why would you buy a gimbal for an action camera that's already got stabilization? Watch our previous podcast.
Yeah, it's not the same thing.
No. So I might just do that because they're small, they're right, easy. You can just, you know, bam, bust a bit of footage out. Obviously, shoot everything at high frame rate.
Cooler. Why not?
And again, the footage from that does match the drone really nicely, so it should make, you know, whatever little bit of an edit I do, you know, much sort of simpler, really. So
nice.
Yeah, so that's the plan for next weekend.
Good stuff. Well, we'll be back next week. I guess. Yeah, we will be back next week. We're back on the weekly now. We're back on the weekly. There is a secret episode, though, that we should have published last week that we forgot to. Say we did. That was all me. That I'm going to upload on Studio Access on a page where anyone can access it. You don't have to pay to get in there just because I don't want to ruin the numbering pattern we've got going on here. But yeah, I will see you all next week. We're going to have a good discussion all about upgrading cameras, getting onto bigger sensors, the finances behind it, and the actual image quality gains and the requirements of cameras as a professional photographer. So yeah, we'll see you all then. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.